calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is putting the stars. London's calling. See, we ain't got no... Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be Matt Smith in the eighth episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. I'll ask Matt his thoughts on the last two matches performed as we saw the highs and lows of football. But before we get started, I want to welcome back my friend to the eighth edition of this show. Matt, welcome back to the Coaching Corner.
Hey, Russ. Good to be back, man. And, got a lot to talk about, not just because there were two matches, but because of kind of the two extremes that we saw.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because the team put out a small video earlier that talks about the highs and lows. And I think, you know, again, if you think about it, we really saw that from a week ago today to basically last Tuesday. The highs and lows of football really showed itself. And that's what's interesting about doing this show today, that's going to be unique from the other shows we've done, because we have two matches that you're going to break down, and we're going to try to figure out what went right in one match and basically what went wrong in the other. And before we go down and break down the QPR match, which will be a more positive outlook, I just want to get your overall thoughts about both of these matches and what we can learn from them.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, it's really two extremes and it was two very different opponents. And I felt like we tried to play a very similar way against two very different opponents. And you know, when you do that, you know, you might gain some things against certain opponents, but you're also going to give up some things. And I think the stuff that we gave up in terms of just the physical side of the game against Wolves and that kind of thing, didn't bode very well for us. But you know, it is, you know, it's a game of highs and lows. It's, you know, every, you know, even within a single game, there's going to be highs and lows, and there's going to be, you know, the game kind of flows that way. And honestly, that's what's great about the game, is that, you know, it's not just, or at least usually it's not just one-way traffic. It, you know, there are chances for each team, and you know, but you know, when you talk from game to game, really you just want to see a consistent, consistent performance. But at the same time, you've also got to change and mold things, because each opponent calls for different kind of strategies in order for you to be successful.
Listen, I completely agree with that. And what's interesting that I mentioned to you off air, I happened to very quickly listen to the audio clip of Kit, and Kit's talking about, you know, I'm paraphrasing a little bit about the differences between the matches, and talking about in the latest match, you know, that Fulham loss, you know, you got to find another way. You might have to find a different way to get a victory, Matt. I think that was the case against Wolves. Again, we're going to go into Wolves, but I think for Fulham to go where we want them to go, they just can't just put themselves out there and expect them to play like they did against QPR, because the other opponent's not going to let you play that way every single time. Each opponent's different. And that's one of the things that I think I've learned through this whole process of these last two matches, is that they're going to have to find different ways to win, Matt.
Yeah, no, and you're going to have to find multiple ways, and you know, you've got to be able to tough out games and play in a physical, hard-fought match. You've got to be able to play a little bit more wide open of a game. You've got to be able to play a high-scoring game. You've got to be able to grind out nil-nils. You've got to be able to play with 10 men, and you've got to be able to play against 10 men. And so there's a lot of different, you know, there's countless numbers of different scenarios that you've got to be able to deal with throughout the course of a season. And, you know, I think that, you know, judging from the soundbite and what it sounds like Kit was saying, it sounds like there was a little bit of not necessarily calling out the players, but just making it known that, you know, it sounds like he probably said something to the players in the build up to the second game against Wolves, and you know, maybe he just didn't get the reaction that they needed.
It's possible. And again, I'm not in that dressing room. I'm not with that team. But for whatever reason, you know, we did not get the performance that we wanted, and we'll definitely talk about that in the second half of the show. But let's start on a positive, because I definitely want to talk about the match from a week ago against QPR. Again, this was a great victory for Fulham. This showed the potential that Fulham have, because, again, they really dominated this match. So, Matt, I just want to get your thoughts on the overall victory for Fulham against QPR. Again, they won 4-0.
Well, it's the way that we want to see Fulham play at home. You know, we want to see them be on the front foot, you know, really pin the team back, play with pace, play with width, you know, really run at teams and press the ball high up the field for 90 minutes and, you know, be able to put teams away when you get a chance. And I think that's what you saw. You know, it was a team that, you know, when at times we'll see us kind of sit back early in matches, you know, at home recently and in the past couple seasons, and but you didn't see that night. And I'll tell you what I think is a big reason of that is the atmosphere at Craven Cottage. I mean, it was fantastic. You know, the stadium was buzzing for the first time in a while. You know, we all know why that is because, you know, obviously being QPR and, you know, a Friday night televised game, you know, that definitely lended itself to it. So I think if we can get that kind of atmosphere back at the Cottage, I think that's why it was such a fortress, is because it was full all the time. Everybody was excited, and it created a really good atmosphere, you know, at the ground. But, I thought for 90 minutes, it was probably the best 90 minutes we put together for some time. You know, we really didn't. Even in the second half, you know, I tweeted out at halftime, I think we're the only club, maybe even in the world, that's nervous at a 3-0 halftime lead. But, you know, we came out and stayed on the front foot and, you know, really went at them. And I think that was a really good matchup for us. So, you know, it's definitely – it was probably one of the best performances I've seen in a while.
Listen, I completely agree with you. And Matt, it's funny because I saw your tweet and I thought the same thing because I was still nervous at 3-0 at halftime. I got to be honest with you. But the approach coming into the second half, and we'll talk about it as we go through this, was really to continue to go at them. And again, we got the fourth goal. And honestly, Fulham could have scored 5 or 6. They didn't. But, you know, in the end, they do get the victory 4-0. Okay, let's break down the team, and let's start with the goalkeeper, Andy Lonergan. What's interesting here is we were a little critical of him on the post-match show, and it really, you know, I won't say it's unfair, but again, he didn't have that much to do, Matt, so I'm curious, what were your thoughts about the play of Andy Lonergan in this match?
Yeah, I really don't think there is much to break down. You know, didn't really have a whole lot to do, specifically in the first half, really didn't have a whole lot to do. Had to, you know, tidy up some things in the second half and things like that, which is that's just naturally going to happen as teams press. But, you know, I thought he was fine. I don't think he was outstanding, but, you know, I think at the same time, he didn't have enough to do in order to be outstanding in that game. So, you know, when we don't have to talk about the goalkeeper and really break down and go in depth into his performance, I think that's definitely a good thing for him to just be kind of the 11th player on the field and really just tidy up things when we need him.
Okay, fantastic. Let's move on. Let's talk about the play of the fullbacks because, again, we saw Ryan Fredericks come in for Jazz Richards, who was out injured for this match. And, of course, on the other side, we had James Husband. How did they fare in this match?
I thought they were fantastic. I thought they were really one of the reasons that we we were able to press so high up the field and attack with and sustain attacks. And, you know, I've talked about that before, about the importance of sustaining attacks and how – your fullbacks getting forward and filling in the spaces of, you know, letting your outside midfielders advance higher onto the outside backs of the opposing teams and us being able to kind of shift forward really can sustain attacks. And they did a great job of that. And, you know, Fredericks is electric. When he's in space with the ball making a run forward, his pace is absolutely phenomenal and is going to be a handful for teams if he can stay healthy. And, you know, I think that right now I think it's it's his position to lose. Even when Jazz Richards does come back and gets healthy, I just don't see why we would go back to Jazz Richards as of now. And James Husband, I thought played very well. You know, moved forward and it definitely wasn't a one-sided attack from our fullbacks. It was we're able to attack from both sides. And when you're able to do that, you really pin teams back and really make it difficult for them to build any sort of attack. And they end up having to lump the ball forward just to kind of hit and hope. And we were able to cut that out. And so I think that they're a big reason for why we were successful.
You know what, Matt? We've talked about this a great deal. Sometimes the best defense is your offense, meaning going forward. And I think the play of the fullbacks really proved that in this match because, again, we were on top of them. And, again, it only took a couple of minutes when you saw a cross from James Husband get right to Moussa Dembele, and he scores on the header. So are you there with me? Again, I think you said this in a prior show, so I don't think I'm talking out of turn here, that you do like the pressing style when we're on top of them, especially with a play from the fullbacks.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that – when you are able to win balls higher up the field in your opponent's half and things like that, you know, it's going to allow for much more effective counterattacks because you just don't have to go as far. It's simple math. You know, if you only have to attack and counterattack for 50 yards as compared to 80 yards, you know, less has to go well. I mean, you can play fewer passes and really run at teams and things like that. So, and then you're just really compressing the space and not allowing them to possess. You know, so it's definitely the way that I look at the game is, you know, the best defense is a good offense and to really press high up the field.
Okay, fantastic. Let's now move on. Let's talk about the center backs because moving forward, I think this pair is going to be vital for Fulham's future this season. So talk about the play of Richard Stearman and also Tim Ream.
I mean, I thought they were good. You know, we were dropping off a little bit in the second half, and that's understandable. You know, as it gets to 4-0, you're starting to say, okay, we've just got to play out the game. Yeah, we want to keep a clean sheet, but let's keep it tight or let's keep it, you know, safe and smart and, you know, not trying to do anything too industrious or too inventive. And, you know, so, I mean, I think from that point, I mean, you know, you walk out of there with a clean sheet with a 4-0 win against a decent QPR team. You know, you've got to say that they did well, but, you know, our spacing was very good. You know, I talked a lot about how, you know, at times our spacing between our center midfield and our center halves was a little bit too much. There's a little bit too much room in between there, but I thought they actually compressed the space well, and we were able to kind of snuff out anything they wanted to do. So, you know, from that point of view, I think that they definitely did their job.
I couldn't agree more, Matt, and let's drill down a little bit more on this because a player that I was really concerned going into this match was Charlie Austin. So how did Stearman and Ream keep him quiet in this match?
I mean, I think that they actually went at him and didn't back off from him. I think that's the best thing you can do. You know, I think a player with the talent of Charlie Austin, you know, as he starts to get the reputation, people start to be worried about him and kind of give him a little bit more space because they don't want to get beaten behind. But that's not the kind of player he is. He's more of just a hardworking goal scorer. And I think that we kind of combated that very, very well. And they, you know, were able to kind of take turns at it. It wasn't just one person, but they were able to kind of hand him off and really organize that well and be, you know, what I noticed is that whenever Austin was in a dangerous position, one of the two was on him, but the other one was not far away. So that if he did get away, we always had cover there, which is definitely what you have to do with a player the caliber of Austin.
I totally agree with that. Okay, Matt, let's move on. Let's talk about the play of the midfield. We're talking on the left, you have Ben Pringle. In the center, you have Ryan Tunnicliffe. And then, of course, you have Jamie O'Hara. And on the right, you have Tom Kearney. So share with me your thoughts on how they played in this match.
Well, I thought they were very good. I thought that they were able to kind of express themselves and really drive at the defense and be, you know, be creative and be important to the attack. And, you know, obviously Ben Pringle scoring the goal, you know, it's great for him. You know, he's, you know, we've talked a lot about him, you know, not showing up and being kind of inconsistent in games and things like that. But, you know, he was definitely hardworking. You know, I'm looking at all of his actions and kind of where they were on the field, and you can tell he was doing a lot of work in our attacking half, and you know, not only down the wing but inside, you know, getting at the center backs and getting down the channels inside the center backs. So, you know, I thought he was very good, and Kearney, Kearney was you know, effective and. You know, did what we needed him to do. He was on the ball a lot. He had almost 60 passes, which is a very, very good amount. And you know, hardly ever turned the ball over. I think he completed like 55 out of his 60 passes. So, you know, you've got to, you know, and had one assist. So, you know, you've got to say that he did very, very well. And both of them kind of – when both of them play well, we're so much more dangerous because I think it relieves some pressure from our front two. You know, when you only have to worry about really Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele going forward, they're much easier to defend. I think when you've got to worry about Kearney and Pringle really bombing down the wings and possibly cutting inside and things like that and being dangerous, then I think we're just so much harder to defend, and we just need to see that more consistently from both of them in the same game. And I think we saw that in the QPR game.
Okay, very good. All right, Matt, let's move on to the strikers. And honestly, this partnership, which I watched in this game, I thought was fantastic. Talk about the play of Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele.
Oh, I thought they were fantastic. I mean, I thought they were all over the place in a good way. They were hardworking and running at the backs and really being a handful for them. And, you know, what we saw is we caught a glimpse of what this partnership could be. Especially in the first half, it was something pretty special. Just in terms of their runs off of each other and their abilities to keep good spacing while still staying connected. And what I mean by that is spacing is important because you don't want to be too far apart, you don't want to be too close, but you still want to stay connected. You know, you still want to be able to combine with each other. Play 1-2s around the corner and behind people and things like that. And so I thought that their spacing and their ability to stay connected was just spot on. Hopefully we can see that again, because unfortunately, as we'll get to, it changed a little bit in the next match.
It totally did, Matt. And listen, before we change our focus and talk about the Wolves match, I just want to talk a little bit more about this match. And some of the talk I've heard after it was, well, QPR weren't that great. You know, again, we were playing against a poor side. I don't go there because, again, I think that takes away from how well Fulham played in this match. I think this is more about how Fulham dictated the play and how they controlled the match more than how poor QPR were. I'm curious your thoughts on this because, again, after the match, I've heard some of this. You know, well, you know, QPR weren't that great. But I think it has more to do with how Fulham played.
No, I agree. And when you say that QPR weren't that great, what you've got to ask yourself is, okay, why weren't they that great? It's not because they're not a good team. I mean, they've won some games and been right there in a lot of their games. I think what made them not play well is us. I think that Fulham made them not play well. And so, you know, I think that, you know, you can't just sit there and every time we win say, oh, well, the other team was crap, and every time we lose say, oh, the other team was great or whatever. But it's there's reasons why teams don't play well, and it's usually because of the other team. I think that that's definitely the case from the other night against QPR. I think that we were a handful for them. They couldn't keep up, and therefore, yeah, they looked a step behind. And, you know, whether they were – I don't know whether they were – God forbid they take us lightly, it being a London derby and such a close, big rivalry. But, you know, you just wonder – you know, obviously their coaching situation is kind of going south and things aren't going too well, but you would figure that this would be a game that they would be up for. And so I don't think that I don't think that they were bad just because they're bad. I think they weren't very good on the night because we made them look that way.
See, I totally agree with that. And, it's funny. I talked to a friend of mine who happens to be a QPR fan, and I said to him, I said, you know what? I said, it was our night. We played well. We took it to you. It was about us on this night. But that doesn't mean that QPR won't be in the mix for top 10 or for potential top six, and I feel that Fulham can be in that same mix as well. It was just on this given night, it was our night, and we dictated it to them. Doesn't mean that QPR is this poor team. So again, that's why I wanted to bring that to you, because that's how I feel about it. And I think this was had a much more to do with Fulham than it did with QPR. All right, now let's go on the flip side, because I think in this match it's going to be, believe it or not, more about the opponent, more about what Wolves did. But we went to the highs, now let's go to the lows, Matt. And again, Tuesday night, Fulham were again at Craven Cottage to play Wolverhampton Wanderers. And going into it, I was hopeful that we would see something like we saw against QPR. And it's difficult to do. But again, this was a match. I thought it was a winnable match. It did not go our way in any way. Again, we could talk about the sending off, the red card. You know, that changes the game. But, you know, again, before the sending off, I thought Fulham were second best. Not you know, they didn't play terrible, but I thought Wolves were just a little bit better than we were. But overall, I just want to get your thoughts on this 3-0 loss for Fulham against Wolves before we break it down.
Well, I think the term you use in terms of flip side from the QPR is perfect, because it was completely the opposite. It was what I saw was a team get absolutely bullied off the park. They were big and physical and went into tackles very, very hard, and I think that we had some players that shied away from that, and I think that we'll get into that a little bit more specifically in terms of who, but I thought that that really they brought the physical intensity, and we were not able to even come close to matching that, and so we were always going to be on the back foot when that happens. I think that at the end of the day, I think we do have to remember after these two games is going into these two games, we were saying if we could come out of here with 3 points out of these two games, then we're okay with that. We don't want to lose both games. We think we should win at least one of these games. If we can win in a draw or at best two wins, that would be great. But, we need to come out of these two games with at least 3 points. And we did that. But after seeing how we played in the first game, you hope that that's going to translate to the second game. Obviously your expectations change. When you play that well in one game, your expectations say, okay, hey, we should be able to go on. We could be able to go on and win both of these and really turn our season around. But, it was kind of a two steps forward, two steps back kind of thing. I think we're back to square one kind of where, before we went into these two games. So, no harm done in terms of standing, but, we really could have made a huge jump up. But I was very disappointed just with the lack of physicality. And, the red card hurt you. And yes, it was, it's a no-doubter. I heard, I was listening to the game live and then watching it, and it's absolutely a red card. It's reckless. It's two-footed. It's all of those things, everything that constitutes a red card. But, I was just kind of disappointed with the physical intensity and how we were able to get bullied off our home field. But fair play to Wolves and coming in and doing that. So, we've got to move on and take it for what it is. But, I definitely think that hopefully it's a lesson learned.
And that's the way I'm trying to look at this, Matt, because, again, I'll be doing a preview in a little bit, and I've been looking at some video of Charlton, and just be honest with you, I think this is a winnable match on Sunday. Actually, a match I'm looking forward to, because I want to see what the response is, because you just said you're hoping that this is something that Fulham have learned from, and I hope so too, because, again, this is a different opponent than QPR, and I don't think I took them lightly, but I didn't realize how different they were until obviously we watched the match and we saw how physical they were. And you have to win matches different ways. You're going to find that out. You can't just go out there and expect to play like we talked about at the beginning, like you did against QPR every single match. It just doesn't work that way. It's teams are going to figure you out, and you're going to have to find another way. And hopefully this will be a very good learning experience from Fulham, that they can't just go out there and expect to win. You have to earn it. You have to find another way. If someone's taking something away from you, if they are bringing a certain intensity, a certain physicality, you have to match it. Then you have to find another way. You have to grind it out. And, again, hopefully this will be something that they can learn from and grow from. All right, Matt, let's start at the back. Let's talk about the play against Andy Lonergan. Again, he didn't have much to do against QPR. He had plenty to do in this match. So how did he fare?
He gave up a very, very soft goal. The second goal, which pretty much broke our back, was a very soft goal. I think it was hit with pace, but that's one that a professional goalkeeper is gonna kick himself for allowing that. I don't think he's necessarily was at fault for the first one or the third one, but the second one, which honestly kind of ended the game, was really kind of a heartbreaker. But I just don't think that he was, he's been excellent in some matches and poor in some others. And so all I'm looking for is some consistency, because I think at the end of the day, from a coaching perspective, you really what you want is you want 11 players where you know what you're going to get day in, day out. You know, if you have somebody who on their day is fantastic, but if they're not on their day is horrible, you'd much rather have somebody who's in the middle and just solid and steady, because you know what you're going to get out of them. And I think that's definitely true from the goalkeeper position. Is I'm just looking for Lonergan to just be consistent. And the only thing he's being consistent about right now is being inconsistent.
Okay, very good. And Matt, before we move on from Lonergan, I want to ask you, because you said you don't blame him for the third goal. And David and I went through the post-match show, and he was a little critical of him on the third goal, saying, you know, he was talking about the wall, setting up the wall, that maybe he didn't set up the wall correctly because the shot was very close and it was right outside the box, and that maybe he took a foot in the other direction and that might have caused him not to get there. But I actually think that goal would have gone in regardless. But I'm curious your thoughts on all that.
Well, it's tough because, you know, they have scouting reports on where these free kick takers like to put their free kicks and things like that. And unfortunately, what you see a lot these days is goalkeepers setting up a wall and still not really trusting the wall. So, you know, there is a little bit of that, and maybe he was a little bit wrong-footed. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you've just got to kind of tip your hat and say it was a pretty decent free kick and be able to move on from there. Yeah, you know, in hindsight, could he have added a player to the wall? Maybe. Could he have, you know, moved them a foot to the right? Yeah, maybe. But I think at the end of the day, I think you've just got to kind of tip your hat and say, yeah, it's just a very good free kick.
That's the way I'm looking at it, Matt. That's why I wanted to ask you. All right, let's move on. We gave them much praise before. We're talking about the defense. Now we got to talk about the play. Let's start with the fullbacks in this match. How do they fare?
Well, I thought Ryan Fredericks was okay. I actually thought that he, you know, wasn't, you know, obviously not as involved in the attack because, you know, in order to be able to get your fullbacks involved in the attack, you've either got to use them very early in the attack and get the ball wide early, or you've got to be able to have hold-up play from your forwards to allow them to get forward and get into the attack. And we had neither. Now, the reasons we had that is because, obviously, Wolves was playing a very similar formation. They had a lot more width, and so it is a lot more difficult. You know, when there is space in behind, you know, if you're playing against a 4-3-3 and, you know, there is space between the wing forward and the outside back and there's 30 to 40 yards of space there, it's a lot easier for outside backs to get forward and into that space. But, you know, when you're playing against, you know, certain teams that have a little bit more width, it is a little bit more daunting to be able to get forward from the outside backs. But I thought Fredericks played okay. I'd love to see him be able to go 90 minutes. Maybe that's just not kind of what he does, but or something he's able to do right now, trying to get fit. But, you know, I thought he played okay. He just didn't get the ball as high up the field as we wanted to. And then James Husbands, you know, kind of the same thing. I just don't think either one of them was really able to get going because we weren't able to sustain any attack or any kind of possession in order for us to be able to get into the attack and be dangerous.
So let me ask you again, because we're going to talk about this in a little bit, because Tony Gale had some commentary in his column about this match, about the formation. I'm just curious your thoughts. When you're playing against a team that's basically playing right back to you with the same formation, does that have a lot to do with their issues in this match? Because we're playing the same formation, we're going back and forth, and they just wouldn't allow our fullbacks to get forward.
Yeah. I mean, when you have outside, when you're defending or you're attacking and you're trying to get forward as an outside back, but there's somebody sitting in that space as an outside midfielder, it is. It's just a little bit more difficult because they've compressed the space behind them. So there's not really a whole lot of space for you to get into. You know, but again, I think that, you know, we didn't really have the play from the front runners either in order to hold the ball up, in order to be able to get our outside midfielders forward onto their outside backs so that our outside backs could get forward. So everything is extremely connected in terms of spacing and team shape. And if, you know, if one domino falls, typically the others fall too. So, you know, it's not just, you know, the outside backs not being able to get forward. It's us not being able to pin them back so that we could get forward.
Right. It's all connected. Each part affects the other. Very, very good analysis there, my friend. All right, let's move on to the play of the center backs. Again, we gave them a good amount of praise against QPR. How did they fare against Wolves?
Well, I thought Tim Ream was actually quite good, believe it or not. I actually thought that, you know, obviously he made, you know, we're at fault for three goals and got beat 3-0, so it is what it is. But, you know, when you look strictly at the statistical breakdown, I thought Tim Ream actually played a decent game. And, you know, obviously now you can't just be all involved in the numbers and be too analytical about it. But, you know, I thought that he was, you know, probably the better of the two, I'd say. I think that Stearman obviously playing against his former team and things like that, I think there was some emotion there and things like that. I don't think that he had his best game. I think that they, you know, and honestly, it's understandable because the players, you know, for Wolves have played with and against him in training for years. So obviously they know his strengths, but they also know his weaknesses. So, you know, a lot of times that's when you see things exposed for a player who's been with a club for a while, when he plays them for the first time with another team, is, you know, they kind of know how to get at him and how to, you know, be effective against him. So I think that's kind of what we saw.
You know, that's very interesting that you put it that way, because I'm thinking going into the match, well, Stearman knows them so well, but again, they know him very well. They know his strengths, but they also know his weaknesses. And of course, same thing with Jamie O'Hara. They know Jamie O'Hara very well. And again, that's going to lead me to talk about the midfield and talk about emotion, because you were talking about Richard Stearman. Maybe he was a little bit amped up for the match. I think Jamie O'Hara was as well. And I don't know if that affected him in this match, but I'm curious your thoughts about how he played and, of course, the rest of the midfield.
You know, you could tell that the emotion of the match and him being kind of jacked up for it, Jamie O'Hara being kind of got to him and really made him get a slow start. Now, I mean, he ended up, you know, he ended up actually being a lot more involved in this match than he did against QPR. But I think that's a lot of that lends itself to the fact that our forwards were a lot more involved in the QPR match than they were against Wolves. So
right.
I think that those two are kind of connected. But, you know, I mean, for instance, I'm just looking at the stats kind of here. Is, for instance, against QPR, you know, Jamie O'Hara had 58 passes. You know, yeah, he only played 66 minutes, but, you know, then against Wolves, he had 74 and actually had a higher completion percentage. So, you know, he actually completed more passes in the Wolves game than his total pass count against QPR. So, you know, yeah, there were slightly, you know, he played 20 more minutes against Wolves, but, you know, clearly he got into the game as the game got going. But, you know, and he played some fantastic balls out wide, you know, going forward to the outside backs and to, you know, to try to bring them into the attack and things like that. But it did take him a while to get going. You could tell that I think the moment got to him a little bit, not in a destroying way, but just kind of slowed him down and didn't really have him as focused into what he needed to do in order to be successful. You know, as for excuse me, as you know, the rest of the midfield, obviously Kearney, you've got to look at that, and obviously that's a huge turning point in the match. You know, I think that you know, it's something that we can definitely talk about, but you know, I think that's something that maybe tactically we got wrong is you know, when you lose a player like that and you go down to 10 men, I think you've got to make a change right away. At worst, you've got to make it at halftime. You know, and we just didn't see that, and really we didn't see it at all, to be honest. I think that you've got to kind of realize, okay, this just isn't working, and we're down a man now, so we might need to go a little bit more defensive just to shore things up, because they are going to be able to have more of the possession and more of the attacks and things like that. So that was definitely a turning point. Pringle, again, just wasn't as involved, just kind of his up and down self, and, you know, just, yeah, just wasn't, you know, as effective going forward. And, you know, really, you know, we talked about this very early in the season, and you know, I said that I liked him because he works hard defensively and things like that, but I don't think he works very smart defensively. I don't think he works intelligently defensively, and you know, I think that he's what I would call just kind of a work hard, you know, he's kind of a workhorse, and yeah, he runs
yep.
around and you know, tries to make things difficult, but what's he really getting done? And is he affecting his other defenders, because they don't really know what he's going to do and that kind of thing. So, you know, that was just pretty disappointing, and just another inconsistent game from him. Because it's just, again, it's something we're kind of seeing regularly.
Okay, and then of course Ryan Tenenbaum. And what's interesting about him, at I was reading Mike Gregg's column, and Mike, you know, again he brings it out to the fans on VFL Film to rate the players. And Ryan Tenenbaum actually got man of the match. So I'm curious how you thought he played in this match.
I actually thought he was very good. I think that he picked up the slack for Jamie O'Hare kind of being off, I guess you could say. Tenenbaum was one of our shining lights in that game, and I think it's well deserved that he got man of the match. I mean, you know, 90% completion percentage rate. I mean, he was probably one of our highest rated players, and obviously being man of the match is kind of a semblance of that. But, you know, he was definitely working hard and doing everything that he could in order to kind of keep us in the match. And so, you know, which is something you like to see when somebody's not having a great match, for somebody to kind of share the burden and to step up his game. But, you know, when that many people are having ineffective matches, and, you know, then you're always going to be on the cosh and, you know, just trying to survive.
Okay, very good. All right. Now, again, from the QPR match, we gave a ton of praise to the partnership of McCormack and Dembele. How did they fare in this match, Matt?
Well, I think that, you know, what I talked about, you know, in just the general breakdown and that we got bullied, I think those are the two that really got bullied. I think the two big center backs from Wolves just absolutely had their way with them. Moussa Dembele.
They were very good. I have to say, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut in, but they were very good.
No, I completely agree. I think that they, you know, what you worry about is that going to be the scouting report for Moussa Dembele now? Because he went from looking like he was stepping from a young player to a mature player at QPR. He looked like he regressed about 10 years in age in that Wolves game. He looked like a young player and somebody who wasn't up to the physical nature of the game. And those two, the two center backs did a great job of just not giving him free space to run, not allowing him to get up to speed, and really just when they went in on tackles and aerial challenges, things like that, really making him feel the challenges. And I think that threw him off, and I think that threw Ross McCormack off too. And then, you know, when the red card comes, Ross has to drop in, which I don't think was the right move. I think the move is to go, you know, to even possibly pull Ross out and go somebody a little bit more defensive. But I think that when you do that, you're going to be stretched. When you leave Ross in as the quote-unquote attacking center mid, if you will, and then he went out onto the wing, that's just not what he does. He's not a defensive-minded player. And so I think that was kind of the wrong – that was maybe, you know, something that we could have done differently. But I just think they got completely bullied. And fair play to Wolves. And you know, they definitely won that battle and I think went a long way into them winning the game.
You know what, I'm glad that you really analyze it that way, because watching back, you know, listening to it is one thing, but when you watch it back and you see it, and you see the physicality, especially with the two strikers up front for Fulham against their center backs, you could see that really did go a great deal of really giving Wolves that stranglehold on the match. And again, they took it to us, but they wouldn't let us do what we want to do, and part of it was bullying our strikers up front and not giving them the space that they probably got against QPR. It was a different opponent, and as we found out, sometimes, you know, when you play against a different style, Matt, you have to adapt to what they're doing, adjust, and for whatever reason, you know, we did not in this match, and again, you have to give credit to the opponent. Now it's about how you respond from that and how you play against a Charlton Athletic team, but again, you know, you and I will analyze that next week. But I do have a couple subjects. Again, let's drill down a little bit deeper into this match, because I have some coaching situations I want to go over with you. And let's start with this one. Again, I was talking to David about this because right before the show, I read the Tony Gale column, and Tony does a great job just talking about Fulham. And in his column, he was talking about, you know, again, he was suggesting he might have gone with three central midfielders against Wolves instead of the traditional 4-4-2 as they were playing back the same formation. I want to get your thoughts on this, because David's point was that QPR played with only one up front and we ran rampant on them. Would it have worked in reverse if we played one up front and had three central midfielders?
Well, I think it's easy to say that that's what you
hindsight,
should do.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, but like we've been saying, we just came off of a match where we played 4-4-2, and yeah, it wasn't against a 4-4-2, but we played a 4-4-2 and we dictated the game. So you go in, you leave that QPR match thinking, why should we change? Why should we change what we do? Because this is why we were good in the last game. And yeah, you know, obviously there's matchups and things like that. But you know, changing your formation after a 4-0 win can really send a very different message to your players. You know, in that, you know, hey guys, we won 4-0, but by the way, we're going to change formations because we're not good enough to play 4-4-2 against this team. You know, what is that? What type of message does that send to your team? You know, mentally, you know, would they go into it saying, you know, hey, we can't play with this team normally, so we've got to do something different from what we've been doing? Like, I'm not sure that that's necessarily the best way to go about it. Even though I know these guys are professionals, I think that we all know that you know, they do have fragile mental abilities and different mental abilities to be able to adjust and things like that. And so, you know, it's easy to say that. And, you know, maybe, you know, looking back on it, maybe it would have been more effective. But I think when you leave the 90 minutes from QPR, I think that a change in formation is the last thing you're thinking of after a performance like we had, you know, on Friday night. So that's why I think that he probably stuck with it. And, you know, I can't say that I disagree, because I think that if you talk to me, you know, if you talk to people on, you know, the day before the day of the game, before the game's played against Wolves, and you say, hey, we should go 4-3-3 and play with center play, or maybe even 4-5-1 and play against,
right,
you know, play whatever, and you know, I think people would say, you're crazy. We just won 4-0. And so it's very easy to say, but you know, it's I think it's something that I don't think I would have changed. Coming off a performance like QPR, you just like to see if you can just ride the momentum.
Okay, and again, that's why I wanted to ask you, because David agrees with you. You know, David felt that very strongly, that, you know what, similar to what you were saying, if you did so well with the 4-4-2, why would you change? That's not the reason. And he was saying that if it was so dominant against a, you know, a one up front, you know, if you were so dominant against a team one up front, couldn't that happen to you if you changed it? And you're giving the other reasons why it doesn't make sense to change it, because you were successful in it. So that's why, you know, again, that's why I'm glad we can have this show. We could talk about it and really see what might have worked. And again, it's hindsight. It's looking at it afterwards. Well, if they did this, but you bring up a very good point, Matt. Why would you think about changing something if it was successful? You know, again, you go with that adage, if it ain't broke, why fix it? So it wasn't broke. So I kind of understand where you're going on that. It's just, I think part of it is just the frustration that for whatever reason, we just couldn't make it work. And I think you have to give credit to Wolves on that. All right. But let's now talk about something else. At the beginning of the second half of this match, Kenny Jackett made a substitution, bringing on Ojo, and he affected this match a great amount. Fulham did not make any subs until after they were down 2-0. I know this is hindsight, but do you think Kit should have made his own changes at halftime, try to affect the game since they were down to 10 men? And, you know, again, you've kind of already said, you've already referenced about the situation with McCormack. So let's go into that a little bit more. What would you have done in this match at halftime?
Well, I think that, you know, I may have even made a change before halftime. You know, I know it was... I know the red card didn't happen that far, that long before halftime. So, you know, what was it? You know, maybe 10 minutes before halftime. So, yeah, you know, you're probably sitting there going, okay, let's, you know, I don't necessarily say that he definitely should have made a change before halftime, because you're saying, okay, 10 minutes, let's get to halftime. Then we can kind of discuss it and work things out, as compared to just throwing somebody on for the last 10 minutes. But, you know, it's tough. It's tough to sit there and you know, and try to, like you said, you know, deal with hindsight and things like that. But, you know, you definitely have to make a change, and you've got to make a defensive change. And I know it may be conceding, you know, possibly giving up a chance to win. But, you know, there's times that you've just got to be a little bit more realistic, and you've got to be, you know, a little bit more just safe with kind of how you need to protect a point. You know, at that point, you know, when the red card happens, you know, honestly, with how the game was going anyway, you're sitting there probably going, listen, we need to protect a point, not try to go get three. And so, you know, I think that, you know, probably, you know, the move that, you know, the bringing Ben Pringle off wasn't a bad move. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad move. I don't think that he was fantastic, but, you know, I think that, you know, I think you've got to go with somebody a little bit more. You know, Sean Cavanaugh's on the bench. You know, can we not bring him in, you know, to have a little bit, you know, more of a defensive presence? You know, it's something that you've got to do in order to be able to protect a point and be able to just be realistic and not sit there and say, hey, we're going to go try to still win the game or whatever. You know, I think if you leave Dembele up front, you try for a counterattack, maybe a free kick, maybe a set piece, something like that, and, you know, then that's how you're going to win it. You know, instead, we stayed stretched out because McCormick, you know, is a very attacking-minded player, and, you know, we struggled to really, you know, keep our defensive shape, and we were definitely punished for it.
Okay, very good there, Matt. And you know what? It's funny because I'm thinking at halftime, you're even thinking about before that. You're thinking about make that substitution then and try to get the point. It's funny because, I you know, again, I'm just a fan. I'm thinking at halftime, man, I just want to see if they can get a point. I want to see if they can just get the point because I think that would – if they can get a result here, this is what I'm thinking, and I'm just a fan, a result would be – would show progress. It would show down to 10 men, and we held on for a point and – and any point's a good point, so I see where you're going on that. All right, my friend, I did ask the Fulham supporters for some questions. We do have one, and it's from our friend Roger Lewis, and I'm just going to read it to you, and please share your thoughts on it. This is what our friend Roger said. Roger's in Spain. Here we go. Tennis players play games lasting between 2 and 5 hours nearly every day in a very long season. They also practice for several hours a day. Why do footballers seem to struggle to play 2 90-minute games a week? I think they should spend more time in the gym instead of the hairdressers or tattoo parlors.
Well, I think that there's something. Honestly, when you compare tennis players to footballers, it's kind of apples and oranges because I think if you look at how much ground an average footballer travels in a 90-minute game. I'm guessing it would be more than a tennis player. Not to mention with tennis players, there's built-in breaks, right? So in between points, there's built-in breaks. So even though, yeah, they're playing for a longer period of time, let's talk about, you know, we'll make a comparison to American football. The average American football game, even though it's 60 minutes long and on the clock, there's something like, I think it's like an average play is something like 4 to 5 seconds. And then there's a break. And so there's built-in breaks and things like that. And in football, it's, you know, it's 90 minutes. And, you know, 45 minutes, 15-minute break, 45 minutes. And so it is a little bit more just of a more endurance-type sport. And so, you know, it is difficult. And it's you know, I deal with it here every, you know, all the time. We play 2 games a week and every week. And, you know, it's difficult to recover that quickly and to be able to go again. So, you know, and then when you add in the physical nature of it, I mean, you know, tennis doesn't have any collisions. You know, when you add in that, it becomes a little bit more difficult too, to be able to wake up in the morning and you know, not be able to get out of bed or not be able to stand up for a little while and things like that. So I just think the recovery time from a 90-minute football match is more than some of the other sports, which is why it makes it more difficult.
No, very good point there, Matt. Very good point. All right, listen, we've got a few minutes. If you don't mind, Matt, you know, I was thinking about this. In our next show, we obviously will be breaking down the Charlton Athletic match. But since we have a few minutes, I thought maybe I could share some information about them and get your thoughts on them because I spent some time this morning really looking at Charlton and seeing where Fulham could possibly win this match. And I got to be honest with you. I think Fulham can definitely win this match. After watching what I watched and reading what I'm reading, I actually, believe it or not, I have a good feeling about it. And part of it is it is what I'm about to read to you, and I want to get your thoughts on if you're on the same wavelength as me. Okay, so again, this is from the great website WhoScored.com, which gives you great stats, great information on teams, and this is their basically their analysis of Charlton Athletics. Strengths: shooting from direct free kicks, stealing the ball from the opposition. Those are their strengths. Their weaknesses: finishing scoring chances, protecting the lead, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, defending against attacks down the wings, stopping opponents from creating chances, avoiding individual errors. This is a big one. Very weak at defending set pieces. And honestly, over the video that I watched, they are terrible defending set pieces. Dare I say, much worse than Fulham. And I'm being very honest there. Charlton style: attempt through balls often, short passes, attack through the middle, playing in their own half. And this is the big one that really got me to think that Fulham could really get at them in this match, Matt. Non-aggressive. Okay, so I just gave you some information. This is from WhoScored.com. This is their analysis on Charlton Athletic. Then again, I watched some video on them as well, and it really backs up exactly the analysis that I just read to you, Matt. What are your thoughts about Charlton Athletic going into the match?
Well, I think just from that simple analysis, I think that it's a very good matchup for us. You know, it seems like they are, you know, almost the opposite of how Wolves play.
Exactly.
Not being not a physical style. You know, you wonder, who's going to play on the wing
for
Kearney being out. You know, I just happened to see on the Fulham website that, you know, Garbutt may be back for this match.
That's right.
So, you know, you wonder, you know, does Fredericks play wide right on the wing and Garbutt come in? You know, I would doubt that. I would think that he would probably be on the bench, but to start with. But you know, I guess that's another, you know, that's a possibility. But, you know, if we could get the ball wide and be able to exploit that, you know, on set pieces, we've been okay. It's obviously the defensive side that we've struggled, so hopefully we can kind of exploit that weakness. You know, the fact that they attack down the middle may actually be something difficult for us. I think it may make us a little bit more narrow, because I think it may encourage our outside midfielders to pinch in and defend, and can we transition into those white spaces very quickly to get to get attacks going. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like it'll be an interesting game, but it sounds like, you know, I don't see any reason that you know, we shouldn't be confident going into this match, because I think some of the things we do well are maybe some of their weaknesses.
Right, and that's why, you know, again, it's about matchups. And when I really started watching some of these videos, I've watched several of them, and then of course, and then I'm doing a little bit more research and finding out a little bit more about them, and thinking this might actually be a very good matchup for Fulham. Very different than Wolves, like you said, not that physical. And if we can get crosses in the box, again, every time I watched a cross in the box, a set piece, you know, again, they looked horrible. And I'm thinking, maybe this is the right opponent for Fulham, even though it's on the road. They could be the right matchup for Fulham right now when they really need it, Matt.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's all about, you know, a lot of it is, like you said, is about timing. And I think this may be the right time to be able to play this match, because if you have a team that maybe isn't as physical, but you got bullied in the last game, I think you're looking to come out and play physically
exactly,
as a response to that. So I think that could put us on the front foot.
Absolutely. And let me just mention again, in WhoScored.com's analysis, they mostly play a 4-4-2. So this could be playing back to what Fulham play, if Fulham go with their traditional 4-4-2, and we'll see how that works. But again, their weaknesses, I think Fulham can certainly exploit with the talent that we have, Matt. That's what actually makes me feel a little bit better. This morning, you know, spending some time looking at Charlton, it totally changed my tune on this upcoming match, because I'm thinking, oh, here we go again. But it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to flip the switch, to change the way things are going. And this is a very big match, man. They have a chance to really get some momentum going into that international break, assess where they are, and figure out what's going right and what's going wrong, and fix what's going wrong. So would you agree with me that this is kind of a crucial match for them?
It is. I mean, anytime that when you're going into an international break or a week off, you always want to go into it with some momentum. You know, you want to be able to go into it and be able to, you know, go into it on a positive note so that you can kind of carry that over. And we do have some difficult games coming up, after the international break, obviously with Borough, right after the international break is going to be a difficult one. But then, you know, we've got, Leeds and Reading who's been playing decently well. So, I mean, you know, you've got some big games coming up. So you always want to have momentum going into those.
Absolutely. Okay. Very good. Matt, as always, this is very enjoyable, my friend. I hope you enjoy doing it with me as much as I enjoy doing it with you.
Oh, man, it's so much fun, and really enjoy it, and can't wait until next week.
Okay, and next week we will be breaking down this Charlton Athletic match, and hopefully it turns out the way that we were just describing it at the very end. All right, before we go, just a reminder, you can download College Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. You can also listen to College Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores via mobile device. Well, that's going to do it for the eighth episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to College Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, Russ. Steven.
Okay. Take care.
Boys and girls.